Everybody, welcome to the True Crime Squad. I'm Christy Brower here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Katie Weaver. Hey, Katie.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's so good. It's Friday. The sun is shining. Friday. The birds are yelling outside. I mean, what could you ask for?
What did our dad used to say? The sun's just shining, the birds are singing, and there ain't no bills to pay or something like that. Is it an old song?
I think it's an old song. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are always bills to pay, but, you know, whatever.
I don't know. Our grandma also, at any time, I used to always get her mail because she lived across the street. Uh-huh. And if she didn't have any mail, every time she'd say, I don't know anyone today.
Nice.
Store. No bills to pay.
To go into a weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is our last episode of the week, and as is pretty per usual for us, we're doing a true crime roundup. We like to pick several cases, like when we have a lot of things that have an update in them or several interesting things happening. This is a great opportunity to kind of hit them all. So we're going to do that by kicking this off with a crime news update from you.
Yes. I got nervous. I got very nervous yesterday in the James Crumbly jury watch, in the verdict watch, because they took a long time. And they finally came back around midday, and the judge called both attorneys into her chambers, and then we didn't hear anything else for a while, and I went, my God, it's going to hang. Oh, how can this be? But then... after closing time last night, they were still there. And eventually a verdict came back. And so I want to share that with you guys. So let's go ahead. Mm-hmm. We're going to watch the reading of the verdict. And then we'll watch just a couple of minutes of the prosecution's press conference afterwards.
Nice.
All rise to the jury.
Good evening. You may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you've worked very hard, and we've all been awaiting your decision. I know this is a very intense decision for you all to make. I believe you've selected a foreperson. Who's the foreperson? You're the foreperson. Could you read the verdict, please?
Each
call? Sure.
Count one, involuntary manslaughter as to Madison Baldwin. Guilty of involuntary manslaughter as to Madison Baldwin. Count two, involuntary manslaughter as to Tate Mir. Guilty of involuntary manslaughter as to Tate Mir. Count three, involuntary manslaughter as to Hannah St. Juliana. Guilty of involuntary manslaughter as to Hannah St. Juliana. Count four, involuntary manslaughter as to Justin Schilling. Guilty of involuntary manslaughter as to Justin Schilling.
Thank you, foreperson. I'm going to ask that Ms. Williams poll the jury. So she's going to ask you each.
Jury in seat number one, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number two, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number three, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number four, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number six, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number seven, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number eight, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number nine, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number 11, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number 12, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes, it is.
Jury in seat number 13, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Jury in seat number 14, was that and is that your verdict?
It is.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I know how hard this has been on all of you, just by reading your face. I know this has been a very hard decision. We appreciate your time. I'm going to ask you to return to the jury room, and I'll be there with you in a few minutes, all right?
All rise for the jury.
Good evening. My name is Karen McDonald, and I'm the Oakland County Prosecutor. I want to briefly thank Mark Keast, who was our lead trial attorney. Really, he was. So many individuals in my office, the entire office, for 2.5 years. We had assistant prosecutors and victim advocates and investigators standing in line to help us bring justice to these families. And I am forever grateful for all of these people who work in this office and serve our county and our state, because we would not be here without them. So thank you. I want to thank Lieutenant Tim Willis of the Oakland County Sheriff's Office and Special Agent Brett Brandon of the ATF. They were instrumental in this prosecution and conviction. They were devoted, they were dedicated. And I couldn't ask for two more law enforcement partners that were as dedicated to victims as these two men. Most of all, I'd like to thank the mothers and fathers standing to the right and left of me. It has taken unwavering courage. I will forever remain in awe of their strength and perseverance that they have shown in the last 2.5 years. This verdict does not bring back their children, but it does mark a moment of accountability and will hopefully be another step to address and end and prevent gun violence.
And there you have it.
Right?
James seemed pretty shocked, I thought.
Are these people ever going to be able to acknowledge even to themselves how badly they screwed up their kid and how negligent they've been? The way that he just shook his head with a frown on his face. I'm like, dude, are you ever going to get that you caused this?
Right. That you are complicit in the deaths of a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no remorse.
None. And no acknowledgement at all that... Nope. They should have done better as parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that they are required to do better as parents, that they are the ones responsible for the care of their son. And they were so negligent as parents that he became a school shooter.
Yep.
I don't know, but I hope that these verdicts are a cautionary tale to people who are just supplying handguns to their teenagers.
Yep. I hope so. We're going to see sentencing on April 9th. That is the same day as Jennifer. And
that's interesting.
Yep. Yep. And as per Jennifer, they could get up to 15 years per count that could be served concurrently. But it sounds like in that state, it might be a 30-year minimum or 30-year maximum for these charges. I don't think we'll see 30 years for either one of them. If we see 15 years for either one of them, I think it'll be a surprise. Neither of them really had any priors. They're not, you know, career criminals or anything. I think it'll be a victory to see them each get 15 years, but I think even that's going to be questionable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just a victory that the Michigan Supreme Court upheld their indictment and the juries found them guilty. Like, this is precedent setting. This has never happened before.
No.
To see parents held accountable for the access to guns and to the negligence of caring for their child's mental health.
Yep. Hopefully it makes people think twice. So James, have the day you deserve. You're exactly where you need to be.
Right? The look on his face made me want to just slap it right off. Like, what a jackass, you know?
Yep. You're complicit, James. You always were.
Yep. Absolutely.
All righty. Well, I'm going to turn the mic back over to you for some creepy crime.
Yeah. This case is new to us, although it's already been all the way through the courts. So, this jackass right here is Richard Sotka. And he was just convicted after a four-day trial in which the jury deliberated for only 1 hour. Right? Of murdering his wife, or his girlfriend, I mean, and her friend. This happened about 14 months ago. Richard Sotka is 49 years old. He was convicted of 2 counts of first-degree intentional homicide with the use of dangerous weapons. This happened on Monday this week in the murders of Rhonda Kajelski and Paula O'Connor. Let me show you Rhonda and Paula. This is Rhonda and Paula. They were best friends. Let me tell you what happened. He was also convicted of several other things. There was a domestic abuse modifier. He was convicted of 3 counts of felony bail jumping, 2 counts of misdemeanor bail jumping, and 1 count of criminal damage to property. He's a real sweetheart.
Well, this guy just does whatever the hell he wants.
Got it. So, the two women were found dead by Kajelski's daughter and a friend. Which, how horrifying is that? So here's what happened. He was hanging out with his girlfriend and his girlfriend's best friend. When he got out, he took a shower. When he got out of the shower, he walked in on these two women kissing. And he said he became jealous and felt humiliated by them. Because, you know, everything's about him, apparently. And so he reportedly said that he snapped and stabbed both women to death.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
He also, at the time, was already on a GPS monitor relating to stalking, violating restraining order, domestic abuse, battery, and disorderly conduct. That was a separate incident. So there were already big problems here. But can you say a fragile ego?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you walk in on your girlfriend kissing somebody else, that might result in a breakup.
Yeah.
But it results in a murder because you were jealous and humiliated. And so you had the right to take the lives of 2 human beings.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he goes exactly where he needs to go forever. He hasn't been sentenced yet. And we'll let you know when that happens and see what happens with the sentencing. But he was convicted of 2 counts of first degree murder.
Good.
Absolutely terrifying. Let me show you their faces one more time. These two women lost their lives.
Families.
Yeah. One of them's child found their bodies.
Oh.
You just cannot get worse than that.
Nope.
Trash human being is what we've got right there. So glad to know he's going to have the day he deserves for hopefully the rest of his life.
Oh, honey, prison's not going to care about your fragile ego. In fact, he's going to exploit that.
You get your feelings hurt? You get jealous and humiliated? Oh, dude, you have no idea what's coming your way. Katie, you're so magical. I hear all these magical sounds happening.
Oh, it's this damn wand. I bought this to use on this show. I thought it might be fun for like certain segments to pull out this little wand that does the thing. This effer does whatever it wants. If I even move a little bit, it goes off again. I'm going to throw it away. I've had it. I was going to give it to the dogs because I thought it might be funny for them to be running around the house, casting spells and stuff. And I don't even want that anymore. I just want it gone. I'm done.
Had enough magic for forever.
This isn't fun anymore.
Well, with that, we're going to kick the mic back to you for some Florida Man.
Yeah. In a weird twist, I'm bringing some really good Florida Man.
What? There is such a thing as good Florida Man?
There is. We've reported on this person in the past. This is Sheriff Grady from the Polk County sheriff's office.
Oh,
and Sheriff Grady is at it again. I love Sheriff Grady because every time he and his office have a win, he holds press conferences that are really something else.
He does, yeah.
And recently, Sheriff Grady's office had a huge win. They had a sting where they arrested 230 people, and for in a sex trafficking bust, a human trafficking bust.
Oh, well, good.
And yeah, nearly 230 people were arrested, and 13 potential victims were rescued during an 8-day multi-agency undercover human trafficking investigation.
Oh, wow.
13 potentially trafficked women that he and his office are helping to get out of their situation. So it's a huge win. So we're going to watch about 7 minutes of the press conference. It was actually 40 minutes long. I took the first seven, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about some of the people that they arrested, because guys, we have to understand human trafficking better. We have to quit thinking this is, you know, children in another country that we need to swoop in and, you know, and save or whatnot. This is in our country. And the people doing this shit, well, recently the media wants you to believe that they're all just a bunch of illegals doing this. Let me tell you something. Of the 230 people they arrested, 20 of them were undocumented. 20. These are Americans doing this.
The vast majority are Americans.
Yep. It's Americans doing this. They're the ones. And we have to understand that and understand that this isn't some boogeyman under the bed. This is your neighbor. This is your kid's teacher. This could be one of your family members. This is your pastor. This is people you know that are doing this shit. So with that, I'm going to give you a few delightful minutes with Sheriff Grady.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us here today. This is going to take a few minutes because it was a very large operation, but I want to start by introducing you to some of our colleagues that joined us this time with this operation. We could not do this without our counselors, so I want to start with them. One More Child, Jody Domingue, Heartland for Children, Caden Parchment, and Saleya Freedom, Sarah Batchelder. In addition to that, this operation was on the west side of the county in the city of Lakeland, and we were assisted by several police departments. A special thanks goes to the Lakeland Police Department. We have Assistant Chief Pacheco here with us today. They donated a lot of resources for us this time, and it's really appreciative. And the support by all of these police departments was over the top. Hans City Police Department, represented today by Detective Dominez, Davenport, Chief Steve Parker's with us. We also have the Auburndale Police Department with us, Detective Kevin Seymour, Lake Hamilton, Chief Mike Teague, and the Winter Haven Fire Rescue was with us, Hunter Hart. And that wasn't just if things got real hot, they'd put the fire out, but I imagine they would have if it had have happened. But it's important to point out that in this county, we don't operate in silos as separate law enforcement agencies. We're all friends. We all respect and love each other, and we all work together. And you're going to see the outcome when you have great police agencies work with you. I'm going to give you a lot of information quickly, and then the reporters can narrow in on whatever they're interested in. 228 arrests, 66 prostitutes, 50 Johns, and 12 others. This time we identified 13 potential victims of human trafficking. But I want to make this statement today. In 1 year, we have identified 58 potential victims of human trafficking in 1 year with these operations. What's significant about that? That is the most ever we've been able to identify. And why were we able to identify this many potential victims of human trafficking? Because of these ladies that's standing with us. We do something that most police agencies run from if they do these kinds of operations at all. We embed our counselors with us from the absolute very beginning of the operation, even before. They are every bit as important to our investigation as our detectives that go undercover and many times risk their lives. So I want to once again thank our social service organizations for joining us from the beginning. 42 of the 228 that we arrested were from Polk County. Now, those of you from Polk County know better. We talk about this, we don't hide it, and if you don't know about it, you obviously live under a rock. So you had to learn the hard way. But for the rest of you, pay attention, because this is not the last operation. We'll have more, and we'll give you the opportunity to be arrested if you're stupid enough to show up. That's a guarantee. In addition to that, 42 of these folks were married. And I've got some quotes from wives that I'll give you in a little bit. And some people say, well, this is not a big deal, but at the end of this operation, I'm going to talk about the 21 illegal aliens we arrested in much more detail. Criminal charges. Oh, it's a low-level misdemeanor, and these aren't violent people. These people had a previous history of 2,038 arrests. Did you hear what I said? These people are criminals in their own right, most of them, not all of them. 879 previous felonies, 1,159 previous misdemeanors. We dealt with 17 firearms this time by 15 different suspects. 44 people brought narcotics. 12 people came and had outstanding warrants. We appreciate that. They came to us. We didn't have to chase them down. One was a commercial pilot. We had all branches of, we had a branch of the military and teachers, and I'm going to talk specifically about those in a minute. But the comments. One wife sent the detective a message the next day. She said, "Good one, guys. Thank you for helping me in my marriage. Keep doing what you're doing." One John said he worked overtime today and he just needed to blow off some steam. Well, we gave him a chance to also cool his heels in the county jail. Another one said, "Well, I came here because, you know, I'm going to be incapacitated for 10 days. I got to turn myself in Monday at the county jail for 10 days. The judge sentenced me to previously." Wait, you don't have to turn yourself in. We're going to give you a ride and some additional criminal charges to go through it. One John, who was married, said, "Well, sometimes you just need to see something different." Well, he did. He saw a different woman, but she was undercover. Then he got to see the jail. I would hate to see what it's like at his house when his wife, who's obviously going to watch this, finds out that he just needed to see something different. And then there was a John that was married for 26 years. He said his wife was at the Hard Rock Casino. And he was at, y'all thought I was going to say something, but I'm not. But it didn't turn out to be the Hard Rock Casino. It did turn out to be the Rock, known as Grady Town, or the county jail.
We're going to take it on down to Grady Town.
I love him because he brings this into perspective for people in a way that most law enforcement agencies don't, to help them understand, like, so much more crime around stuff like this. And, you know, that within prostitution, you have trafficking victims.
Yep.
People who do not want to be there, who are not choosing this.
And they are doing the thing, like he said, that so many offices have run from. And back, you know, several years ago when there was the defund the police call, And a lot of people thought that meant, you know, literally defund police departments, remove them. It didn't. That push, which was poorly named, but that push was to add more mental health help to the police, add more counselors, more therapists, more mental health professionals to help figure out some of this stuff that maybe the police aren't well trained in, because they're trained in their jobs, not these ones. But Sheriff Grady did just that. And he has included counselors in a lot of the work that they do. And it has made a huge difference. And like he said, the reason that they have made so many busts in this last year where they've been able to help 58 human trafficking victims is because of the mental health care they brought on board that can identify what's happening.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's just huge.
And but I help victims after the fact, too. I mean, it's such a it's such a better way of looking at dealing with traumatized people.
Yep. So I just want to list a few of the folks that they arrested just to continue to give this a little bit more of a personification. A volleyball coach from New York who is a tutor to middle school students.
Oh boy.
A triathlon coach who showed up with meth.
Jesus.
A math and science teacher at New Beginnings High School. An IT specialist at Tampa General Hospital, a registered nurse at a Bay Area nursing home, an Air Force sergeant, an airman police officer, a 19-year-old scheduled to begin his Air Force training, a man who used to be a detention deputy with the Polk County Sheriff's Office.
Wow. Fell for their sting. That's hilarious.
Two brothers who were 16 and 17 who showed up around one of their locations armed with a BB gun, wearing hoodies and ski masks. They weren't entirely sure what the hell they were trying to do.
What the hell?
It looked like they were trying to rob the undercover detective who they solicited online that they thought was a prostitute.
So they really thought...
They weren't there to have sex. They were there to steal from her. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Wow.
Yep. He said, during these types of undercover investigations, I can truly say that we have seen it all, and yet we are still surprised by some of the violent acts we encounter. These two teenagers were incredibly lucky that they did not brandish a firearm while stalking who they thought was a prostitute at a location filled with law enforcement officers. This could have ended very badly for them. This should also illustrate just how dangerous it is to agree to have sex with someone in exchange for money. 13 other suspects brought firearms to the location.
My God, that is scary.
Yep. So so there you go. So rock on, Judge or Sheriff Grady. You are doing the good work out here, and
absolutely,
I really hope is serving as a great example to other police forces and sheriff's office in a way that we can cooperate in mental health care as well as police work to better for the good of all involved.
Well, and to be so transparent and like the statements from the wives, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is the kind of shit that ruins families, that ruins people's relationships and lives, you know, like.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep. So there you have it. Yeah, I love it too. I'm glad to see it. And just, but you guys, last thing on that, just consider that in a year they have arrested enough people. They've done enough operations here that they have helped 58 human trafficking victims. 58. That's just one county in one state in these United States. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's happening. It's happening right here. It is not some evil foreign boogeyman. It is happening here in the United States every day.
These are children, you know, these are women, you know, these are Johns that you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
All righty. Well, I'm going to turn it back over to you for a crime news update.
Yes. We have an update in the Jeremy Best case. If you've been following this case with us, this is a local case to us. Jeremy Best is charged with the first degree murder of his wife, her unborn child, and his 10-month-old son. This is what Jeremy looked like in court this week, looking a lot saner than we've seen him. Mm-hmm. A trial date is now set for Jeremy Best. This is all happening really, really fast. When you think about the Daybell case, the Koberger case, even the Major John Kaler case, like this is happening really fast. But we're still like a year and a half out from the trial, but to have a trial date already is amazing. It is set for September 15th of 2025. That will be in Teton County. Teton County is actually the county where Katie and I were born. Mm-hmm. It's a very tiny, in population county, right up against the Idaho-Montana line. It is where the Teton Pass crosses over the Grand Tetons from Idaho into Wyoming to Jackson Hole. That's where this place is. And Jeremy Best and his wife lived in Victor, Idaho, which is a tiny, yeah, tiny little town that you go through right before you go over the pass to Jackson Hole. So he was indicted by a grand jury in Teton County on December 18th for 3 counts of murder in the first degree. They have filed notice that they are seeking the death penalty against Best. You'll know if you've heard from us on this case that this is a really, it's an incredibly sad and painful situation. Jeremy Best having a huge psychiatric event when this occurred. It's an absolute tragedy to have lost Kaylee and her baby and their little boy Zeke. It's tragedy. It's tragedy all the way around. But the way handled in Idaho is to completely ignore the mental health breakdown that Jeremy was having. He was found naked wandering in a store on November 30th of last year when it was 30 degrees outside. He was not in his right mind. The police did not put a mental health hold on him, nor did the doctor at the at the emergency room at Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center, which is where the police sent him. We have a lot of questions and a lot of concerns about how this case is being handled. It's not that it shouldn't be dealt with, and it's not that there shouldn't be consequences for Jeremy's actions, but to seek the death penalty against someone who was so clearly having a mental health emergency is a terrifying thought. And Idaho has gotten real bloodthirsty lately. The death penalty, as we know. Mm-hmm. The thing that I always come back to with this case and all of the death penalty cases in this state is that there is clear hesitation around using the death penalty in Idaho. Yeah. And yet we have this faction of people pushing and pushing and pushing for it. But we have Thomas Creech, who's been on death row for 40 years. We have Gerald Pizzuto, who's been on death row for almost 40 himself. And we have Robin Lee Rowe, who's been on death row for like 35 years. They have not been executed. They tried with Thomas Creech a couple of weeks ago. It was an unsuccessful execution. It's clear that they're, as a whole, were hesitant to do this.
Yeah.
And yet we've got a group of bloodthirsty humans who want nothing more than to execute Chad Daybell, Lori Ballow, Brian Koberger, Major John Kaler. They didn't consider death penalty for him. And now Jeremy Best. He's the one that I felt like was probably the one. Well, I mean, Koberger, of course, too. But
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm anti-death penalty. Y'all know that. But I just... this makes me sick. They're pushing this trial through quickly. There's been a huge avoidance of Best's mental health state, which is, you know, has been in the public eye. We all knew what happened with him.
Right. And we're just pretending like that didn't happen.
Right.
It's really gross.
It is. It's very scary. It's something that we need to be aware of. for ourselves and our family members. Mm-hmm. We had a family member that had a huge psychiatric emergency and killed someone. Mm-hmm. Would you want them to face the death penalty for that?
Yeah.
There are a lot of questions. So that's where we're at with Best. You know, they're pushing everything through quickly with him. That is a short amount of time for a death penalty mm-hmm. trial. I'm surprised that they already have a date. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a lot longer than that in Lori Vallow and Chad Abel.
This just isn't that complicated.
It isn't.
And especially if they're not going to bring mental health to the table, it's just not.
Right.
I wish
his defense
that...
wants to bring mental health to the table, but it's yeah. been blocked.
Yeah. Why is that?
Right.
I really, really wish that Best would plead guilty to get the death penalty off the table and just end this right now. Maybe that's not even an option at this point, but I really wish that he would, because his life's over. His life is over as he knows it. And mm-hmm. everything that he loves has died at his hand. And whether he was, you know, whatever his state was at the time, that's just the reality of where things sit right now. And right. honestly, to not put his victim's family through anymore, to not put his family through anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
He would do well to just plead guilty, take his lumps, go to prison, end this. Yeah. My opinion.
Well, you know, his attorney is Jim Archibald.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim Archibald taught us a lot about the death penalty in the mm-hmm. Lori Vallow case. And he said that when he has a defendant that is charged with first degree murder who is facing the death penalty, he sees it as a win just to get the death penalty off the table.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that there is some work around that being done, but it does depend on the prosecutor. I mean, a deal has to be offered. You can put out the feelers as a defense attorney that, hey, we're willing to talk.
Right.
But the prosecutor does have to be willing. And also, of course, you know, it depends on what they're willing to give and take.
For sure.
So we'll see. But boy, this case is moving through the system really
fast. This case just hurts my stomach. It's so sad.
It does mine too. There's no good outcome here. None.
No. It's just so bad what happened. All of it. I just hate it.
All of it. Horrible. Well, speaking of horrible, Katie, you've got some creepy crime for us.
Yeah. Okay. I want to introduce you to this gentleman right here. This is John Barnett. John Barnett was a whistleblower. He worked for Boeing for about 35 years, 37 years. He's an engineer. And John and Boeing parted ways in 2017 because John became a whistleblower, speaking out against Boeing for some really egregious safety issues. And Boeing, of course, took kindly to that. But in truth, he was uncovering some things that were really concerning. One mm-hmm. of them was the deployment of oxygen in case there was a problem on the plane. What he discovered is that the systems that they were purchasing and putting on these planes were not working correctly. And in fact, at one point he commissioned something like 200 of these systems and ran a test on them, and more than one third of them failed. Brand new mm-hmm. systems, more than one third of them failed.
Yikes.
Are one third of you on the airplane willing to die because Boeing just didn't care? I mean, it's concerning. There was also an issue with the metal floorboards, over time shearing off bits of metal that could be falling below the cabin and potentially shearing off electrical wires.
Holy shit.
Now, that seems like a problem. So there were multiple things. And so, of course, he and Boeing, they parted ways in an ugly way, and there have been lawsuits, and he has testified you know, to various organizations, to Congress, I think, and stuff like that, in, you know, trying to bring some accountability to Boeing. Well, last week, he had been doing some depositions, and in the midst of those, he disappeared and was found deceased in his pickup in the parking lot of the hotel where he was staying. And initially that death was called a self-inflicted gunshot wound, and it is under further investigation.
His lawyer, well, that's a little convenient, yeah, right now. I can't imagine that he would be taking his life right now, mm-hmm, when he's finally got the opportunity to speak up about this.
Yeah, this feels really Epstein-ish. And
I was going to say, I think he killed himself about as much as Epstein did.
Yeah, it sure looks that way. And his attorney's shocked. He said he was thrilled to be getting these depositions done and being able to move on with his life. He wasn't acting to me at all like somebody who was getting ready to unalive themselves. It's like, it's sus. So then today, a woman has come forward who's a friend of the family, going only by the name Jennifer for her own safety. Good call, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Saying that he had told friends and family that he had absolutely no intention of ever killing himself. And if anything happens to me, it's not suicide.
Oof.
Yeah.
I follow a TikToker who is another Boeing whistleblower.
Yes.
Who is absolutely devastated, yep, about this, and talks about what a good person John was, mm-hmm, and how he was an inspiration for other people who have come forward, yeah, to speak up about safety issues with Boeing, and how just flabbergasted that she is that this would happen. But
yes,
I don't believe for one second that this guy took his own life.
I don't either. I don't know if we're ever going to see justice on this case. We're talking about biggest of big money here, you know.
Yeah.
I want to give you a couple of quotes from him. He said in 2019, in an interview with Ralph Nader, he said, "Boeing's done their damage to me. I was forced to retire, but it really needs to be brought to light before we start losing airplanes. That's my top concern, the safety of the flying public." He'd said things like that many times, and was providing information that was really, really concerning.
Yeah.
He spent 32 years with Boeing, and so he worked at the factory outside of Charleston, South Carolina. And at any rate, he was a hero, honestly, to the flying public in bringing things to light that needed to be brought to light. I mean, do you want to get on an airplane that corners have been cut and where they know that a third of their oxygen systems aren't working, but it's just not? You want to be on a plane where the airplane manufacturer says that fixing the floorboards issue is just too expensive, so we're just going to let it slide? What? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, at any rate, not a lot to report on this, except for that I feel like it's one that we should all be paying attention to. And
most definitely.
Much, much love to his family, the other whistleblowers, and everyone else who loved him. It's a loss. It's a huge loss. And it's scary to think that here in these days and ages, you still might be, could be murdered for what you know.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What a case. Yeah. So if anything comes from that, we will certainly talk about it. But
yeah.
Most definitely. With that, Christy, I'm going to let you wrap us up with some weird crime.
You bet. So I presented this case to you originally last week. This is the case in Long Island where body parts were found in two different parks. Mm-hmm. Turned out they were dismembered bodies of two people. Well, those people have now been identified as 59-year-old Donna Connolly and 53-year-old Malcolm Craig Brown. I'm going to show you a picture of them. This is Donna and Craig. And their bodies were, they were killed and then dismembered, and their body parts left in parks where children, joggers, and then the police and cadaver dogs found them. It's a terrifying scenario.
Horrible.
But we're learning some more things now about, you know, there are four people have been arrested. Mm-hmm. And we're learning a little bit more about them. So Stephen Brown is cousins with Malcolm Craig Brown, if that tells you anything. And he is one of the four people who has been arrested. They have all been in court and pled not guilty. As we know, I talked to you about last week that bail reform in their state has created a situation in which that, because they have not, no one's been charged with murder yet, because they have to complete the autopsies, determine cause of death, all of that stuff. And so they're all out on ankle monitors, which is pretty terrifying. When it comes to this situation, you know, they're out. Well, we still don't know what has happened. So, lots of situations going on here. One thing was that people kind of freaked out at first because this isn't very far from where the bodies from the Gilgo Beach serial killer or Lisk have been found.
Right.
Now, you know, we know that the Lisk serial killer is in prison, is in jail being held on lots of counts. So it wasn't him, but it's kind of a strange, creepy thing to happen.
Yeah. Well, it worried people that this was a copycat or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we still don't know a lot other than the identities of the victims. Because a lot is still happening. You know, they're still trying to figure out cause and manner of death. I mean, they're, I think it's a pretty clear assumption that these are homicides, but they have to determine cause of death. They got to go through all that stuff before they can actually charge these folks involved with anything more than, you know, abuse of a corpse and that kind of thing. But we're going to keep a close eye on it because this is a terrifying thing that can happen in anyone's community.
Yeah.
Yikes. So just a quick update in that case. But when we know a little more and we get autopsy results back and those kinds of things, we're going to be sharing that information moving forward.
Can you imagine just being walking your dogs at a park and coming across human body parts?
Oh, God. No. That's horrifying to me to think that you would just find somebody's leg in a tree or whatever. Like they were just spread out. And the way that it was done is so strange because it really wasn't done in a way that was meant to hide the body parts.
They were pretty
easily found. Yeah. Like, I don't understand at all what the purpose of the dismemberment and the spreading of the body parts around multiple parks was, other than literally to cause terror in people.
Yeah. Like, literally, worst Easter egg hunt ever.
Yes. Oh, God, you're right. It's just so strange to me. Like,
that was terrible.
I'm fascinated by this case because I want to know, why did they do this? I mean, why did they commit these murders, obviously, or whoever did? Because there are four people arrested, but we don't know that they all committed it. But then why did they help dismember these bodies and disseminate their parts like this? It's so strange. Is this a drug-fueled insanity, maybe? Like, none of it makes, it just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to getting a little more information because my true crime brain is like, why the hell would you do any of this?
Yeah.
Well, and with that, that is our roundup for the week. We've got lots more coming. We're going to do a couple of synopsis shows on the Chad Daybell case next week.
Yeah.
Because trial is coming, my friends. It starts on April Fool's Day. Oh, my God. Chad is the biggest April Fool we've all met in our whole lives, as we know.
Couldn't be more fitting.
Couple of wrap of sort of sum up summary episodes to bring you up to speed because this has all been going on for a really long time. These murders were committed in 2019, and so here we are in 2024. Y'all know, if you followed it, that Lori Vallow was convicted last year on all counts of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft. But now it's Chad's turn, and he's taken his chances with a jury, and the death penalty is attached in this case. So it does make it that much more complicated. So we're going to share with you our experience with it and where we've been. We've covered this from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And many people have commented to us and in various ways that we know more about this case than any other podcasters do. And it is true. We do. It's local to us. We live here. We know the community. We understand all of the background, as well as we've been present for this case from the beginning. We've been in court with Chan. We've been in court with Lori. We have a lot to say. So we're gonna really kick that off next week as we prepare for his trial.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So watch for that, as well as everything else that we have coming up. Next week is our watch party. All you have to do to join the watch party is go on your computer to True Crime Squad on YouTube, our home page, mm-hmm. and there is a button that says join, and you just click join, and you choose the watch party, and that's how you join the watch party. I know it seems weird and complicated because it is on mobile. It's very hard to join on mobile. You have to do it on a computer.
And when why YouTube?
YouTube makes a lot of things difficult, and these subscriptions mm-hmm. are one of them. They are mm-hmm. complicated and dumb. But just go to True Crime Squad on YouTube. You'll see the button that says join. Click on that. But you got to do it in a browser, not mm-hmm. in mobile, for some stupid reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that, we're going to send you off for the weekend. Take good care of yourselves. Get outside if it's decent. It's decent here, so I know I'm going to be trying to do that.
Yeah.
And you guys know it. We are the True Crime Squad. Thanks for being here.
Take care.